from deep inside your radio.
Yes. Yes, it is, Lishow. I'm going to go over here and turn it up. I got to pump it up, ladies and gentlemen, because I got to hear the show, you know? Be nice to see it, too, but hey, first things first. So, speaking of invisibilities, from the Reuters News Service, this disc will self-destruct in 48 hours. That's the warning the Walt Disney Company will issue in August when it begins to rent DVDs that after 2 days will become unplayable and do not have to be returned. Hey, that's great for the landfill. Disney Home Video Unit Buena Vista Home Entertainment will launch a pilot movie rental program that uses the self-destruction technology. The discs stop working when a process similar to rusting makes them unreadable. The discs start off red, but when they're taken out of the package, exposure to oxygen turns the coating black and makes it impenetrable by a DVD laser. It can sell the DVDs almost anywhere without having to set up a system to get the discs back, as you would if you were renting. Hey, we got an immediately self-destructing technology that's, 40, 50 years old? It's called radio. It goes away. Of course, there's no revenue stream. Oh, yes, there is. We'll get to that later. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, on the subject of invisibility, we had an eclipse of the moon this week. Did you see it? You can't see an eclipse. You can see the effects of the eclipse. But we did indeed have a fine, fine, fine eclipse of the moon. However, that's not the eclipse I'm most interested in. The one I'm most interested in is the one that affects this story. Now, on this broadcast, during the recent unpleasantness, your host read portions of this story. It originated in a newspaper in Great Britain. It has since bounced over to Canada, where it's been reprinted in two reputable newspapers in Toronto, despite their own problems over there. Then it's bounced back to be to appear on the BBC's website, and I believe on a BBC TV news program, and to be published in a reputable Australian newspaper. The point I'm making, ladies and gentlemen, is this story has been in reputable news media in every major English-speaking country, except this one. The American media tactics, culminating in the supposed rescue of PFC Jessica Lynch, infuriated the British, who were supposed to be working alongside them. In reality, we had two different styles of news media management, says British Group Captain Al Lockwood, the British Army spokesman at Central Command in Doha, Qatar. Qatar, says Lockwood. I feel fortunate to have been a part of the UK one. In the early hours of April 2nd, correspondents in Doha were summoned from their beds to CENTCOM, the nerve center for the war. Jim Wilkinson, the White House's top figure there, had stayed up all night. We had a situation where there's a lot of hot news, he recalls. The president had been briefed, as had the Secretary of Defense. The story the journalists were told when rushing in has entered American folklore. Private Lynch, a 19-year-old clerk from Palestine, West Virginia, was a member of an ordnance company that took a wrong turn near Nasiriyah and was ambushed. Nine of her comrades were killed. Iraqi soldiers took her to the local hospital, which was swarming with fedayeen. She was held for 8 days. That much is uncontested. Releasing a five-minute film of the rescue to American networks, the Pentagon claimed that Lynch had stab and bullet wounds and that she'd been slapped about on her hospital bed and interrogated. It was, according to that story, only thanks to a courageous Iraqi lawyer, Mohammed Odeh al-Rahif, that she was saved. According to the Pentagon, he risked his life to alert the Americans that Lynch was being held. He's since been offered citizenship, by the way. Just after midnight, Army Rangers and Navy SEALs stormed the Nasiriyah Hospital. Their daring assault on enemy territory was captured by the military's night vision camera. They were said to have come under fire, but they made it to Lynch and whisked her away by helicopter. Al-Rahif granted asylum. He has a $500,000 book deal. Rescue in Nasiriyah, which will be published in October. The trouble is the doctors now say she has no recollection of the whole episode and probably never will. Her memory loss means researchers have been called to fill in the gaps. The doctors in Nasiriya say they provided the best treatment they could for Lynch in the midst of war. She was assigned the only specialist bed in the hospital and one of only two nurses on the floor. I was like a mother to her, and she was like a daughter, says that nurse. We gave her three bottles of blood, two of them from the medical staff, because there was no blood at this time, says Dr. Harith Al-Husuna, who looked after her throughout her ordeal. I examined her, he says. I saw she had a broken arm, a broken thigh, and a dislocated ankle. Then I did another examination. There was no sign of shooting, no bullet inside her body, no stab wound. Only road traffic accident. They want to distort the picture, says the doctor. I don't know why they think there's some benefit in saying she has a bullet injury. The doctors told the BBC that the day before the special forces swooped on the hospital, the Iraqi military had gotten out of there. We heard the noise of helicopters, says a doctor. He says they must have known there would be no resistance. We were surprised. Why do this? There was no military. There were no soldiers in the hospital. It was, the doctor said, like a Hollywood film. They cried, go, 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 with guns and blanks and the sound of explosions. They made a show, an action movie like Sylvester Stallone or Jackie Chan, with jumping and shouting, breaking down doors. All the time, unquote, the doctor. All the time, with the camera rolling, the Americans restrained doctors and a patient who was handcuffed to a bed frame. 2 days before the rescue, Dr. Al-Husuna had arranged to deliver Jessica Lynch to the Americans in an ambulance. I told her I will try and help you escape to the American Army, but I will do this very secretly because I could lose my life, he said. He put her in an ambulance and instructed the driver to go to the American checkpoint. When he was approaching it, the Americans opened fire. They fled just in time back to the hospital. None of the details the doctors provided to the BBC made it to the video or to any subsequent explanations or clarifications by U.S. authorities. The BBC asked the Pentagon spokesman in Washington, Brian Whitman, to release the full tape of the rescue rather than its edited version to clear up any discrepancies. He declined. He would not talk about what kind of Iraqi resistance the American forces faced in making the rescue, nor would he comment on the injuries Lynch actually sustained. I understand, said the Pentagon spokesperson, there is some conflicting information out there, and in due time, the full story will be told. Unquote. It's time to move on, ladies and gentlemen. We got to move on. See, the thing is, they're always saying it's the American public that has the short attention span. I think it's the people who run our media. They're the ones who cancel shows in 4 minutes. We're going, hey, what happened to the show? I was on during the commercial and then it went away. Anyway, yes, please, can we move on? Let's get back to the good eclipses. Hello, welcome to the show.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. What a little moonlight can do. Ooh, ooh, ooh. What a little moonlight can do. You're in love, your heart's a flutter, and all day long you only stutter, 'cause your poor tongue just will not utter the words I love you. Ooh, ooh, ooh. What a little moonlight can do. Wait a while till a little moonbeam comes peeping through. You'll get bold, you can't resist her, and all you'll say when you have kissed her is, ooh, ooh, ooh. What a little moonlight can do. comes peeping through. You get bold, you can't resist her, and all you say when you have kissed her is ooh, what a little moonlight can do. I built me a ship one foggy night, and I waited until the time was right. Then I checked the controls and got ready to sail, and still I live to tell the tale of my moon ride. I saw me many a wonderful sight on that hair-raising, nail-biting, frightening flight, till I reached the moon in all its glory, and still I live to tell the story of my moon ride. I hit the moon with a great big bump. I got out of my ship and decided to jump. I jumped a mile, if I jumped an inch. And when I came down, I landed in a clinch with the moon men. They bound my hands and they bound my feet, and they thought they found something new to eat. When they boiled the water, I got pretty scared. But don't think for a moment I came unprepared for the moon men. I managed to get a hold of my new ray gun, filled with rays conserved from the broiling sun. And I heard a maddening, shattering sound as I shot to the uneven, cheese-covered ground, the moon men. I turned around for one last view of the craters and the valleys all purply blue, when I saw a fleet of flying saucers which were filled with all the law enforcers of the moon men. I ran for everything I was worth. I got into my ship and I headed towards Earth. I hit the world with the moon and whale, and still I live to tell the tale of my moon ride. Crazy moon ride, crazy moon ride, crazy moon ride.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above your eyes. It's a fabulous night to make a romance, neath the cover of October skies. All the leaves on the trees are falling, till the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to plead to the calling of your heart-stricken place off the low. Pour the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. Shine in your blush. Can I just one more moon dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love? Well, I wanna make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. And I know now the time, but it's just right. And straight into my arms it will run. When you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. I remember my dream will come true there, there and then I'm gonna make you my own. Every time I touch you, you just tremble inside your mind. Oh, how much I want you. can hide. Can I decide one more dance of you, my love? Can I make some more romance with you, my love?
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this moon-dappled edition of the show. It's just a show about eclipses. That's what it's really all about. Not ellipses, eclipses. But it's also about stagecraft. The New York Times, pausing in its serious bout of self-examination this week to tell us about the rest of the world temporarily, noticed that there's a lot of good stagecraft going on in the Bush administration. What is this now? 2003? Thank you for that. A couple of indicators of that. On Tuesday, at a speech promoting his economic plan in Indianapolis, White House aides went so far as to ask people in the crowd behind President Bush to take off their ties, according to a television station in Indianapolis, so they would look more like the ordinary people the president said would benefit from his tax cut. Isn't it the ordinary people that are forced to wear ties now? Isn't non-tie wearing a sign of leisure? That's why I got into show business. Apparently the administration did take severe pains to make sure that the Navy personnel aboard the Abraham Lincoln in that much ballyhooed photo op we've been talking about for weeks, the Benetton look. Yes, I know they have different functions. The shirts are coded for different functions, but that didn't ever answer the question of why the wild array on display behind President. Well, the answer is because the people at the White House wanted it that way. They didn't want all the purples here and all the greens there. They wanted a wonderful rainbow array. And also from Indiana, one of the eight seniors who met privately with President Bush at the Indiana State Fairgrounds Tuesday said the president remarked that it felt like the group was just chatting around the kitchen table. According to the Indianapolis Star, there's a reason for that. The president met with the seniors in a dining room, quotes, that was constructed specifically for the 35-minute gathering. The room had four walls and was complete with carpeting, several framed prints, and a round wooden dining table. The only thing missing was the ceiling. According to Democratic Mayor of Indianapolis, Bart Peterson, it was a little like a movie set. Yeah, if you want to know what looks like a movie set, ask a mayor. Calls to determine who paid for the room were not returned by state Republican officials. So it's good stagecraft. So soon. News of the war on drugs, ladies and gentlemen. A 57-year-old Harlem woman preparing to leave for her longtime city government job in New York City died of a heart attack this week after police officers broke down her door and threw a concussion grenade into her apartment. according to New York City Police. They were acting on what appeared to be bad information about guns and drugs in the apartment. This is your brain on bad tips. One of Scotland Yard's most senior officials has called for hard drugs, crack cocaine and heroin, to be decriminalized, saying that police cannot win the war against dealers. Chief Superintendent Anthony Wills said as the state could not control the criminal trade in drugs, it should take it over instead. I would have no problem with decriminalizing drugs full stop, said Mr. Wills. They have to be very stringent measures over the production and supply of drugs, and we've got to remove the drug market from criminals. I do not want people to take drugs, but if they're going to, I want them to take them safely, with a degree of purity, and in a controlled way. He says anti-drug draconian measures have always failed. There are some places where people are beheaded if they sell drugs, but even this does not stop the trade. New York Times reported, passed on the word, I think, from the feds, that drug testing in schools has no effect on the kids using drugs. And from Australia, a retiree mistakenly arrested in a dramatic police bungle received an apology from the Australian Federal Police. Police said sorry 30 days after Peter Van Lierop's car was rammed and he was arrested at gunpoint by undercover federal agents just outside Melbourne. Officers wrongly suspected the retired lawyer was involved in the importation of $80 million worth of heroin, apparently because he parked his car near a suspect under surveillance. He was traveling to a land auction when police swooped on him around 2 in the afternoon. The next day, he spoke of his terror when his BMW was surrounded and rammed by unmarked cars before he was captured by gun-toting undercover agents. He said he feared he was the victim of a terrorist attack because police did not identify themselves for about 15 seconds. He was released later in the day, then demanded the apology. The letter of apology was hand-delivered to his home yesterday morning, apologizing for any inconvenience. We thank you for your cooperation and the understanding you displayed, said the police. And so that's your brain on the war on drugs. And speaking of apologies...
Should we regard your comments today as, in a sense, an apology?
Oh, absolutely. It's an apology to our citizens who lost their lives. It's an apology to the residents of Saudi Arabia who lost their lives and to the loved ones who lost their lives.
Yes, it's the Saudi Foreign Affairs Advisor leading our feature.
We're so sorry.
The Apologies of the Week. That was Adel Al-Jubeir on his Washington-wide apology tour this week after the terrorist attacks in Riyadh. And his official title is Saudi Foreign Policy Advisor. I don't know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why that entitles him to be the only Saudi who gets invited to speak on American television. It's just the way it is. But now more of the apologies of the week. We're flooded this week. This was a very... I don't know whether it's we're more sensitive in the wake of 9/11, so there's more apologizing, or more insensitive, so there's more need for apologizing. That's something we're going to have to study as time goes on. Faced with the threat of a libel suit, comedian John Edwards yesterday retracted his claim that he'd been offered a bribe by a former Mercer County, New Jersey official and apologized for making the remarks. An incendiary ad from New York City fire unions attacking Mayor Michael Bloomberg over budget cuts was broadcast Friday during his weekly radio appearance, leading his spokesman to fume and the station to apologize. That's right, WABC in New York is apologizing, not for Rush Limbaugh, but for running a commercial from the Uniformed Firefighters Association during the mayor's weekly radio broadcast. Said Mayor Spokesman Ed Schuyler, the question is why WABC would be willing to embarrass their guest for a buck. Program Director Phil Boyce conceded this particular commercial was over the top. The spot that aired on the mayor's show today was not the spot I approved. The one I approved was more appropriate. We screwed up. I do apologize to the mayor if he was embarrassed. Yeah, it's the only thing that's ever been over the top on talk radio. West Virginia Governor Bob Wise said this week he was not faithful to his family and said he hopes one day for forgiveness. Wise, who has a wife and two children, issued a statement in response to inquiries from the Charleston Daily Mail, which reported that a man was accusing the governor of having had an affair with his estranged wife. The governor is not going to resign. I believe in accountability, he said. In my private life, I've let many people down. I hope one day for forgiveness, but I know that forgiveness must be earned. He then asked for privacy. It's kind of an apology. Lethbridge, Calgary, Mayor Bob Tarlac said he plans to take out a full-page newspaper ad to apologize to the citizens of Great Falls, Montana, for an extensive and costly search for Dar Hetherington after she disappeared May 3rd. He wants to travel to that city next week to make a personal apology. Hetherington made national headlines in Canada after disappearing while on an official city visit to Great Falls. 3 days after she vanished, the mother of three young children surfaced in Las Vegas. She said she'd been abducted, drugged, and sexually abused by a man she met in Great Falls. But a Great Falls County official said she later admitted to making up most of the story. Maybe the drugging was not. The Recording Industry Association of America apologized to Penn State University for sending an incorrect legal notice of alleged internet copyright violations. The notice and subsequent apology appears to mark the first time that a faulty notification has been made public. The RIAA a week ago Thursday sent a stiff copyright warning to Penn State's Department of Astronomy and Astrophysics. Department officials were puzzled because the notification involved the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and alleged that one of its sites was unlawfully distributing songs by the musician Usher, or by the Usher musician. The letter demanded that the department remove the site and delete the infringing sound files, but no such files existed on the server. Matt Socchio, the department's system administrator, realized that the department has on its faculty a professor emeritus named Peter Usher, whose work on radio selected quasars the site hosted. The site also had a copy of an a cappella song performed by astronomers about the Swift Gamma Ray satellite. The combination of the word Usher and the suffix .mp3 had triggered the RIAA's automatic copyright infringement notification. More apologies. There's a whole mess. I don't even understand this story. Microsoft apologizing about whether its United Kingdom division had been developing an internet-enabled portable toilet, then denying that it was a hoax and apologizing for the denial. Let's get to the good stuff. The New York Times. Yes, the New York Times. Top executives of the New York Times told hundreds of staffers at a town hall meeting this week they were sorry for mistakes and oversights that allowed former reporter Jason Blair to fabricate and plagiarize material. The Wednesday afternoon meeting, which was closed to reporters but widely reported on, somebody was running a tape recorder, somebody's, was called after the newspaper found that Blair had committed frequent acts of journalistic fraud in stories from last October through April. Reporters, editors, and photographers crowded into a theater behind the Times' Midtown offices for the session that lasted more than 2 hours. Some staffers interviewed after the session complained they did not have sufficient time to ask questions. Federal prosecutors have asked the Times for information about Blair. The Times has not received a subpoena. The Times last week published a four-page apology in the paper listing the mistakes made by the reporter Jason Blair. Then the Times had to apologize for a mistake it made in the apology. In a corrections column, the paper admitted its accounting of reporting flaws misstated a name in a sentence from a Washington Post article Blair apparently lifted. Misstated the plagiarizing. The Post article identified the missing serviceman from whom a prayer service was conducted in Cleveland as Brandon Sloan, not Brandy. And finally, in the apologies of the week, back to New Jersey, where I guess it all started this week. No, it started with Saudi Arabia, but then it went to New Jersey. A 43-year-old Hewlett, New Jersey man apologized to Jersey City, New Jersey, saying he was sorry for abandoning his warehouse full of rotting fish. which created a potential health hazard for the city's residents. The suspect, Lin Xu, turned himself into authorities after being sought for nearly a week. He was arrested on 4 charges. He apologized for causing the city so much trouble with his warehouse. The problem came to light when Jersey City firefighters responded to a call in the downtown section of the city after receiving complaints about a horrid smell. Firefighters found Xu's building, which formerly housed Max's Natural Foods warehouse, with the refrigeration turned off and no employees in sight. The lack of refrigeration had caused thousands of pounds of seafood to rot. Jersey City workers have laid poisonous bait in the warehouse to kill the number of rats that gathered to feast on the rotting food, officials said. What's that smell? It's New Jersey.
Like a poor little rich boy.
This is Le Show, and this just in, another apology from the Bear Stearns companies. They're stock brokers. They apologized for using a stock analyst to promote a new stock offering when the ink was barely dry on an agreement between Wall Street and regulators barring such practices. Well, the ink ain't dry. I guess the contract, the agreement ain't in force yet. Ink must be dry, ladies and gentlemen. That's the... All right, we're going to move on. We're going to move on because, you know, so what if we didn't find anything? Major General David Petraeus, commander of the Army's 101st Airborne Division, raised the possibility this week that Iraqi President Saddam Hussein's toppled government long ago destroyed its stocks of chemical and biological weapons. Speaking to reporters at the Pentagon via satellite link from Mosul, Petraeus was asked why U.S. forces had not yet located any Iraqi chemical or biological weapons. Quote, I just don't know whether it was all destroyed years ago. I mean, there's no question that there were chemical weapons years ago. Whether they're destroyed right before the war or whether they're still hidden, Petraeus said. He specifically mentioned the account of an Iraqi informant that Iraq destroyed its remaining stocks of such weapons shortly before the war broke out. Now they tell us. We came to bear country. We came loaded for bear, and we found out that the bear wasn't here, says Colonel Richard McPhee, a member of Task Force 75, which went in with U.S. troops to find and display the hidden weapons of mass destruction. But it's time to move on, isn't it? Says Senator Lincoln Chafee, Republican of Rhode Island. Our constituents like a victory, and at this point, it's a victory. In the beginning, our constituents were saying they better find weapons of mass destruction, unquote. Well, what our constituents like, they get. Jack Straw, the British Foreign Secretary, declared this week that uncovering Saddam Hussein's alleged weapons of mass destruction was not crucially important. Not crucially important. Hey, the new Iraq. A radical cleric in Iraq has warned women who consort with American soldiers to conform to Islamic precepts within a week or face retribution from vigilante groups. Sheikh Mohammed Fartouzi, a leading authority in the Shiite Muslim slums of East Baghdad, well, there's a title worth contending for. Leading authority in the Shiite Muslim slums of East Baghdad. When do they hold those elections? He said the murder of sinful women and those who control them would be sanctioned by Islam. He also had warnings for theater owners and alcohol sellers. The burning of theaters would be permitted, he said, at Friday prayers, if their owners continue to show indecent films. He added that sellers of radios and television should stop their trade. Didn't mention anything about Disney and their self-destructing DVDs. He would like those self-destructing DVDs, wouldn't he? The Newhouse News Service reports that for at least a year before the Iraqi war was launched, U.S. military planning was underway designing the campaign. But planning for the war's aftermath didn't begin until January 20th, barely 60 days before the war started. Even then, it quickly bogged down in massive disagreements over the size, scope, and even the purpose of the post-war U.S. occupation. Which would explain something. But let's get to easier things to perceive. Ladies and gentlemen, what effect did the Iraq war have on the number of tonights uttered by Tom Brokaw during the NBC Nightly News? We checked this week, and here's what we found out.
Good evening. It has been a long and painful week in Saudi Arabia. As NBC's chief foreign affairs correspondent Andrea Mitchell reports tonight, this is a dramatic public turn for the Saudi rulers. And as NBC's Ashley Banfield reports from Riyadh tonight, those who survive still are trying to cope with this shattering experience. Up next, NBC News in Depth tonight, a big study this week saying the big fish are almost gone. NBC News in Depth tonight, fish stories. But as NBC's Brian Williams tells us tonight, the people who have spent their lives on the ocean off Massachusetts insist it's just not true.
Only five tonights, scientifically proven.
We're too light on the science.
Well, we may be. We're too light on the tonights. That is the lowest level of tonights in an NBC Nightly News broadcast since we've been keeping count, ladies and gentlemen. And our records go all the way back to the year 2000. So it may not be the new Iraq, but it's the new nightly news.
The fight. So come on, dance with me, darling, till we see the first day's light. I've got a sneaking suspicion you won't go home tonight. Don't you know, darling, I've got a sneaking suspicion you won't go home. You won't go home tonight, darling, you won't. I've got a sneaking suspicion, darling. Sneaking suspicion, darling, I've got a heart. Sneaking suspicion.
Ladies and gentlemen, you probably are aware that a book has been published by a respected historian, don't you know, which brings to light for the first time the details of President John F. Kennedy's 19-month-long affair with a then, well, at least at the beginning, 19-year-old intern, White House intern. Yes, it's true. She came forward this week. She was known as Mimi at the time. She's now a married, actually, I think, widow lady. Anyway, she's 60 years old. She came forward with a statement acknowledging it, expressing her relief that she could now talk about it with her two married daughters, and asking for privacy. Unlike a certain other intern who fell in with another president. But the story, as I say, it's got all these resonances, doesn't it? Meanwhile, the networks made their fall primetime schedule notifications this week to advertisers in New York, but still unresolved is whether Bill Clinton and Bob Dole will return to the point-counterpoint segment of 60 Minutes. It all sounds like another episode of Clinton Something, next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the Harlem Years.
Bob, you got to be thanking the good Lord that Newt Gingrich still holds press conferences, because he makes you seem reasonable.
Okay, and Bob, how does that make you feel?
Tired?
No, I mean, when you hear Bill say that, how do you feel?
Make me feel like Bill's had a look at the copy before it went up on the prompter.
Hey, now, we both had the right to review and correct.
At least for this workshop.
Well, Bob Dole's sorry, but some of us had an audition to attend.
Viagra wants you back?
More like vice versa. You know how much that stuff costs when you're not getting it for free? Thank goodness Elizabeth can raise soft money like a passel of Trent Lott's.
Wait a minute. You're using her soft money to buy Viagra?
Why do you think they call it soft money?
Jeez, we should have this in one of the scripts.
Anyway, no, it's for a Hummer spot that plays off my old Pepsi commercial.
Uh-huh.
Bob Dole's sitting on the beach, watching a lot of girls who look like Britney Spears walk by. Suddenly, Bob Dole looks up. His eyes widen.
Uh-huh.
This is in the script, mind you.
Right.
And they cut to what he sees. Instead of it being Britney Spears holding a Pepsi, he sees Bob Dole driving by in a Hummer. It's two Bob Doles.
Uh-huh. And you'd play both?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Gentlemen, I love the chemistry we're getting here.
Yeah.
And I think we were right. It's so important to have you two in the same room.
Yeah.
But it's also important to get something down on tape to show Mr. Hewitt that we're making progress here.
So, should I say my line again to feed Bob?
No, I'll just pick it up with where I get mad.
Cool.
What'd you say?
I said cool.
I'm sorry. I thought somebody said something, old fool.
Oh.
So Bob Dole says, Bill, I'm seeing all the Democrat candidates coming up with health plans. Sounds like they're more influenced by Hillary than by her husband.
Okay, that's a zinger. Bill, how do you feel when you get zinged?
Depends what the definition of zinged is.
No, I mean, he said basically that you're not a factor in the Democratic Party anymore.
Hey, big news, you know. If we weren't two has-beens, we wouldn't be debating on TV. We'd be doing stuff.
Well, of course, that's the truth of it, but there's a dramatic truth, too, and that's what we're trying to... Oh, shoot, I thought...
Hey, Julian, good news. I remembered to wear my suit.
James, didn't Clarice tell you we were running long?
Yeah, but hey, Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, it's the administration of the unemployed.
Hello, James.
Mr. Carville, Bob Dole's pleased to see you.
James, you wouldn't want to wait
in. So what we doing here? Honing our debating skills?
Yeah.
Stick around. That's what I'm doing. You know, Mr. President, over at CNN, they're bumping and squeezing crossfires just like it was a gator gut sausage.
So what do you think, Carville?
Hmm?
I say the JFK intern story is bad for Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton says it's good for Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
That what you guys got on the prompter? I'll take me some of that.
No. I meant, what do you really think?
Yeah, well, you know, it would have been better for Bill Clinton if it had been Dick Nixon or Gerald Ford having an affair with an intern, but...
But there's a limit to people's imaginations.
Yeah, you know, I, I don't think it's a limit to what folks can imagine. I think there's a limit to, you know, what they want to imagine. I mean, it's like nutria sex. You know, you know it's happening, but you'd rather take their word for it.
Yeah, I'm just seeing, I don't know, our friends at Saturday Night Live doing a sketch where Ken Starr is cross-examining Jack Kennedy about his sex life. You know, Mr. President, may I remind you, you're under oath, and this videotape is going to be leaked to the Drudge Report. Now, what about that East German spy you were boinking?
And don't think Ken Starr says boinking.
Yeah, I don't think we have any friends at Saturday Night Live.
And JFK just looks in the camera and says, live from New York.
Fellas, we're on the meter here. I mean, what I don't understand is why Bob Dole, all due respect to, and his friends in the Republican attack machine, don't just come clean and apologize for dragging the country through all of this. You know, when presidents who got half a pecker in their pants been doing this since the country ended at the Appalachian Mountains.
Listen, James, I'd love to do that because it takes attention away from the thinking of the Democrat candidates and puts that attention square on the plumbing of our friend here.
This is what we should be harnessing in a more concise way with a prepared...
And see, what I think is transparent is who gives Monica, what's-her-name, her own show?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what network?
Yeah.
Why, it's Fox. Imagine that, Mr. Vice President. See, I'm using some Dole-style sarcasm here. Suddenly, the idea of the vast right-wing conspiracy doesn't seem so much like a hormonal woman's cry for medication, does it?
Sir, I'm sorry to have gotten you started on this fussing when you got televised argumentation to work on.
Why don't we just take a 10 and assume for the union guys that we've already used 6 of it?
That sounds good to Bob Dole. He can call his agent.
Angst and middle-aged powerlessness. Together, they add up to Clinton something.
On her way to work one morning down the path alongside the lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor half-frozen snake. His pretty colored skin had been all frosted with the dew. The thing, she cried, I'll take you in and I'll take care of you. Take me in, tender woman, take me in for heaven's sake. Take me in, tender woman, sighed the snake. She wrapped him up all cozy in a comforter of silk and laid him by the fireside with some honey and some milk. She hurried home from work that night, and soon as she arrived, she found that pretty snake she'd taken in had been revived.
Take me in, tender woman, take me in for heaven's sake. Take me in, tender woman, sighed the snake.
She clutched him to her bosom.
You're so beautiful, she cried. But if I hadn't brought you in by now, you might have died.
She stroked his pretty skin again and kissed and held him tight. Instead of saying thanks, the snake gave her a vicious bite.
Take me in, tender woman, take me in for heaven's sake. Take me in, tender woman, sighed the snake.
I saved you, cried the woman, and you bit me, but why? You know your bite is poisonous, and now I'm gonna die.
Oh, shut up, silly woman, said the reptile with a grin. You knew darn well I was a snake before you took me in.
Take me in, tender woman, take me
Ladies and gentlemen, what's happening in the new Iraq? Well, yes, it's chaotic and it's anarchic, and the murder rate, 242 murder casualties in the last 3 weeks, almost all from bullet wounds. Hey, they've got a lot of guns in Iraq, in private hands. That must have protected them from tyranny. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across North America via Sirius satellite radio, and around the world whenever you want it via the internet at two locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like sending more guns to Iraq if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. This is KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9, KCRI Indio Palm Springs at 89.3, KCRY Mojave Antelope Valley at 88.1, and KCRU Oxnard Ventura at 89.1. KCRW is subscriber-supported radio, handpicked music, and NPR News for Southern California, webcasting all news, all music, and KCRW at KCRW.com and radio at AOL. KCRW is a community service of Santa Monica College.